Hello, hello. All right, all right. Good afternoon, my friends. What is cracking? We got Javier Jase in the house, Elliot Lane here with Benzinga's Cannabis Insider. New time allotted. We are officially at 1 Eastern time every Tuesday and Thursday, and we're launching off with a heck of a show. One of the leading PR firms in the nation in cannabis and psychedelics will be joining us, DeRay Ross from DeRay & Company. And then right after that, Andrew D'Angelo, I think first time on the show, will be joining us to chat as well. It's going to be a fun one. But Javi, before we dive into your news, my friend, let's get it kicked off.
Woof.
That was sick. New intro, new time.
New music. It got a lot more hardcore, like, immediately.
Pumped. Midday pump up, y'all. Thank you, AT, for that. Producer AT bringing it to the house, as always. But Javi, what's up, man?
Doing great, doing great. Excited about our show today, our new time. We got a bump to the prime time of financial news. While the markets are open, so you can actually make decisions based on the news and the interviews that we conduct, none of which is investment advice. Disclosure, just keep it in mind. Remember it.
Keep it in mind. Just keep it in mind that you don't get to sue us later on, right? Because everybody's investing in cannabis stocks right now, right? Is that a thing, Javi? Hey, before you dive into your news, and we're going to be really quick, you get like 3 minutes to run through some things. I saw something in our newsletter today that almost blew my mind. And I think it's probably due to the exchanges that they're on. Aurora's market cap, take a guess. ACB on the NASDAQ.
$1 billion?
$175 million.
What?
I don't think, I was like, that, is that right? I don't know. But then I saw Terrasen's market cap. It's like $450 million. And I'm over here like, if this is real, that's crazy.
Yep.
I don't know. No, somebody spot check me on that one. But Javi, jump into some news, man.
Insane. Yeah, I mean, Aurora on the NASDAQ is 241 million Canadian, which must be like 200 million, which is still insane considering sales.
Isn't that crazy? Sales. Like, just the comparison between the two was, I blew me away a little bit this morning. But anyways, cannabis stocks don't make sense a lot, y'all. We play the long-term game. Alan Brockstein actually said it very well. Short-term investment in cannabis stocks is treacherous.
Yep.
Long-term is essential when looking at the cannabis stocks right now, at least until there is regulatory change or large institutional buying. With that said, Javi, tell us what's on your mind for the next couple minutes, man.
Yeah, I mean, not great news out of the markets, actually. Canopy Growth Corporation, that is CGC, is getting removed from market benchmark indices, S&P and TSX Composite Index, starting on June 19th. Basically, you know, market cap isn't just there yet. It's a sad development for the industry, right? It's not just about Canopy, but about the larger cannabis companies being included in these composite indices tended to signal the fact that they were gaining mainstream acceptance. They were seen as other big players in other industries. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't seem to be at that point just yet.
Well, it feels like until we have just more institutions participating at large, and it doesn't all just happen with safe banking. I'm sure our guests have tons of opinions on that today, but it's going to be a hot second before we see some of these large institutions diving in. And only then will these indices, I feel like, really roll downhill.
Indeed. Some interesting news for a private company, Endocana Health. Shout out to our good friend, Len May there. They were granted the first patent for a DNA test enabling hyper-personalized cannabinoid therapies based on user genetics, right? The ultimate objective of this patent, right, and the technology behind it is to reduce the amount of people who are visiting the ER for cannabis-related effects, whether it's psychosis, which is not very common, but it can happen, or cannabinoid hyperemesis, or rapid heart rate, right? A lot of people, you know, do edibles and then end up in the ER because they're freaking out, right? It's nothing particularly, dangerous, but people do freak out, right? And it seems like this new technology could help people better select the kind of products that they're consuming.
Well, there's so much education to be had in this space, scientifically and beyond, and how cannabis affects you. There is not one effect, right? I mean, I guess there's like an overall effect, like this makes you sleepy, this suppresses your appetite. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it still hits us all a little bit differently. So something like this, it's big news.
Indeed. Two more news items out of Central America, the Caribbean, to be more precise. Very good news in both cases. In Antigua and Barbuda, they're allowing Rastafarians to legally use marijuana for ritual purposes. This comes 5 years after Antigua and Barbuda decriminalized marijuana. But now, you know, people who practice Rastafarianism can legally use marijuana in their rituals. And then in Barbados, individuals with minor drug offenses can participate in the cannabis industry, which is also a good signal of Barbados moving in the right direction when it comes to righting some of the wrongs from the war on drugs, which, as we know, emanated from America, but did not only take place in America. It was pretty global.
Listen, keep your Argentinian propaganda over there, man. We don't want any of it here. All right. One more, man. What else you got for us?
A Benzinga exclusive, the marijuana wholesale platform Leaflink, invested an undisclosed amount in a logistics company called Leaf Logistics and created a strategic partnership to expand their operations and offerings in California.
Nice. Yeah, that was a big one. This is their first investment after their Series D, as you said. So mm-hmm. $100 million, seeing it put to use here.
I wonder
a lot of money.
Invested. Undisclosed means very little or a lot. There is, I don't think there's anything in between. They are invested like $50,000 or $5 million.
Well, we've gotten away from that side of cannabis where it's press release for, you know, waking up in the morning. but now we just get to play the guessing game sometimes. But all that said, Javi, good round of news today, y'all. As always, check out benzinga.com/cannabis for Javier and his team's absolutely wonderful and industry-leading coverage of this space. 30 plus articles a day, by far the largest financial and business outlet covering this space. Thanks to Javier, you are truly a gem, my friend. With that said, let's dive into people who are as cool as Javier, if not a little bit cooler than both of us. We're going to start on the PR side. DeRay Ross, the founder, president, chief honcho at DeRay & Company. What's up, my friend? How's it going, DeRay?
Hello there. Thank you for having me.
No, we're thrilled to have you, DeRay. So, you know, you are a massive PR voice and create voices for a lot of companies and executives in the cannabis and psychedelics industries. I want to dive right in. Just from your perspective, talk to us a little bit about the gaps in the public-facing information when it comes to the cannabis industry specifically.
Well, we're still at an education point where we're still educating, certainly on the PR side, when we're working with journalists, we're still educating a number of journalists. Obviously, Javier, who I agree is a total gem and we adore beyond words, knows what's going on, has the beat, of everything and the heartbeat of everything going on. But the reality is that obviously it's more than Javi, he's done such a great job, but a good part of what we still do in our PR efforts is we have to still educate, educate journalists, educate consumers, and really help with the transparency in what we do on PR to kind of, overall just help the industry. So it's a tall task. It's definitely gotten better, in a lot of ways, certainly since when we first started many years ago, but there still is always more work to do. And it still is confusing and complicated. And I can appreciate what you said earlier about you used to get a press release every morning, every day. And so things are constantly shifting and changing. And so, you know, we continue to have to do that as well. So that's a good part of what we do is still that educational process.
Are you advising your clients on releasing less, right? Because it's a tough balance, right? You got to make the news and you got to make the news consistently, right? Your clients have expectations to be on the news every other week. And it's usually
not every other week, every week. They expect every to be, week. I have to correct you. It's not every other week. It's every day or every multiple times a week.
Even worse, right? So like, are you advising that they press release less and go for more topical angles, right? Because those are harder to place at the same time, but it also hurts credibility to do a bunch of press releases when there's news that isn't really news. Like, how do you balance that out?
It's tough. Obviously, it depends if we're talking about a public company where certain news has to, you know, go over the wire, and we're talking investor relations. But I've always believed, even before I was in the cannabis space many years ago, you have to be careful how many times you go to the well, as I like to say it. And you have to be careful, you know, pick your poison, pick your battles. Really, what can you combine together? What makes sense? Again, it's kind of stepping back and coming up with that strategy. And it's not just, let's send it all out there and see what sticks. That's not an approach that we've ever, since I've been in business 23 years, and I've never just agreed with that. It's always like, okay, let's look at the big plan here. And of course there are announcements that come through or financial or whatever that may not have been able to be planned, or obviously deadlines change and deals change and that sort of a thing. So there's always the unknown, but if you've planned out everything that you do know, then you're ready for the unknown. And in this industry, there is so much of it that we definitely put that strategy together. It's one of the things that the clients say over and over that they really appreciate, that we'll tell them, listen, we're going to the well too much, or, you know, can we wait on this, or let's talk this through. And kind of figure out what makes sense now, given the calendar, what may be going on in the news cycle, because that's also a key thing. I mean, Javi, you know, you're pitched all sorts of stuff and it has to make sense. So sometimes there may be a new study or something that comes out that may change our timeline in something that we didn't know that wasn't, you know, wasn't related to us, but we want to newsjack or we want to tap into that. And that can certainly change the whole and shift the whole strategy.
Yeah, I saw it. I'd love your perspective on this. I saw an article the other day. It was on LinkedIn. I think it was a self-written article, not published anywhere necessarily outside of that platform, about how, you know, the PR vehicle is really centric toward the more corporate side, the more MSO side, right? There's not enough PR for, you know, those small businesses. And, you know, it got me thinking, is that the case? Is it just that PR is a service, you know, that you have to have budget for it? Is it that there's not enough media out there that is clamoring for the updates of these small businesses? You know, is it a mix of all that? I'm just curious, you know, in the vehicle of PR and coverage for cannabis, where are we lacking?
Well, it's all that you've pointed out, right? But there's also, you know, I've been on a few panels lately. I was on one, I'm not going to name where it was at. And the person sitting next to me, you know, put together a press release. It was his own company. He did it himself and didn't care that, you know, it was not going to sit well. And then the state was after him. And, you know, so I think, you know, there's the budget issue, number one. You know, certainly that, you know, are you a public company or kind of what are you bound by? You know, remember, there's that component of it too. Legally, what are you bound by? But you also need to have buy-in from the owner or ownership or leadership of that company that you need press and that it needs to be handled by a professional. So you have to have that buy-in first and foremost. And until you kind of have that, it's hard to help. And I think in this industry, there's, you know, it's such a challenging industry, and people are OGs and they've been in it a really long time and they have their thoughts and they're entitled to them and certainly respect them. But, you know, we also come from the PR side where we have to follow the rules and the regs and the way that we pitch and the respectful way and the way you handle media, the way you write a certain way in AP style. I mean, there's just that component of it that comes with working with a professional. certainly we're not the only PR firm in the space, but we all do have to and want to work with journalists in a respectful manner, in a certain way. There's lead times for long lead magazines, short lead online. And there's just, you know, a lot of variables that I think come along with, I guess I'm just a big fan of, you know, hire a professional. You know, you hire a lawyer for your legal advice and an accountant. And so, I'm biased, obviously. I'm a PR professional, but there's a lot more that comes along with this when you hire a PR agency. And one very, very important thing is, you know, in this industry, it's crisis communications. You don't want to be figuring it out at the last minute or after something has broken and you're trying to fix it. So certainly there's a methodology to what we do and why we do it.
We often talk, you know, about the big challenges for, you know, getting press and general, you know, awareness, building awareness around a cannabis brand and cannabis in general, right? Education, as you mentioned, is key. But like, what is well received by the media, right? Like, if you know, to say it in a poor manner, but like, what is the easiest sort of PR to get placed, right? Like, what do you see the media is more receptive to?
So I think it depends on the area that we're talking about, but certainly a state that's opening up for medical, which obviously we've done a number of states that have opened up there. Also states that are going from medical to adult use. There's a lot of excitement. There's a tremendous amount of education because in most cases we're working with local reporters who aren't used to the industry. And those are critical. I mean, obviously getting local placements to make sure that you know, if their patients in a medical state, you know, or consumers, know about the opening and know about it's now open. So yeah, obviously those are very different from the profiles of individuals that we work with kind of on a more national level and or submitting people for speaking opportunities and awards. I mean, all those are kind of key, columns or key structures that I guess that we work on or key buckets that we work on in our office. And I don't think any of it is easy anymore because it is very clouded and confusing And honestly, cannabis is, you don't need me to tell you, cannabis is going through a difficult time. And so, you know, there was such excitement, you know, obviously, last year of what was going to come. And we're all still hoping and wishing and waiting. And certainly, you know, many of us are involved in helping make that happen. But it's definitely, narrowing in media who will cover, narrowing in companies that are even in the space. And it's definitely a challenging time. With that, I think we just still have to keep working, hustling, making things happen and getting really creative. And again, working on that strategy, which at the end of the day, what is going to make the needle move for our clients? And it depends on what kind of client in the space that you are, you know, in terms of that strategy that we put together. But it's definitely not easy. And it really depends on, are we talking local coverage in that state? Obviously, again, we get a lot of coverage there for new markets that come in. Or if we're talking more on, executive profiles, new product lines, expansion of product lines, that sort of a thing. So it's really interesting because in no other industry that I've ever worked in, each state is its own regulated entity, right? And so we work with clients that have, that are in multiple states, but it's not the same. Normally, if you have a client that's in multiple states, okay, you know, you kind of get that together, but it has to be so custom based on the rules and regs for each state that it's almost sub clients within a client, even though there's a master brand, if that makes sense. So there's a lot of layers.
Absolutely. DeRay, really appreciate you joining us. There's so much we can dive into, but alas, we're at time here, but we look forward to continuing the conversation. And hopefully we can jump into psychedelics next time, as I know you have quite the reach into that space as well. If you're a company looking for PR, hit up DeRay and Company. Thank you again, DeRay. Appreciate it.
Thank you both for all you do. Appreciate it always. Thank you. Hey. Take care.
Awesome. I mean, wealth of knowledge. When it comes to PR, they're similar to us. I mean, they have this information at their fingertips all day, every day, product launches, strategies that these companies are taking. They're helping affect the strategies. It's really cool to pick their brains, and especially DeRay.
Indeed. Loved it.
I say there let's like she's more than one person.
Flipping.
Let's do it.
Mr. Elliot Lane.
We have one. We have half of the D'Angelo brothers with us. Andrew D'Angelo, probably only the cooler, one of the only cooler sets of brothers than the Lane brothers is what I'll say there. You know what, though? I got it out. It ended out there. Okay, we're done. Let's bring over Andrew D'Angelo. Andrew, I thought it was an okay intro, but Javi says it was bad. So my apologies. Let's do one better. Andrew D'Angelo, cannabis OG, man with the plan here. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. Great to be with you guys today. Thanks for having me.
Awesome to be here with you too, man. When did you get into cannabis? Like, ooh. What? When did you dive in and why?
Bro, before you were born. No, kidding.
But almost. Well, okay, almost, because my older brother, Steve, is 10 years old. He started when he was 13 or 14 on his cannabis entrepreneurial journey. I was 3 or 4. So almost by birth. And one of my earliest memories of cannabis is going down in the basement of our family home when I was about 6 years old. And my brother and a business partner of him at the time had all these bales of weed that his partner had fished out of the sea in Florida and driven up to the DC suburbs of Silver Spring, Maryland, where my mom's house was. And they were down there drying the weed out, getting ready to sell it. And I remember that very well, because they were using pretty much every inch of the basement and they had every fan and every blowing device imaginable blowing on this weed. So yeah, when I had to grow up, you know, it's not a good idea to be a weed dealer when you're 6 years old. I don't recommend that for anybody. But when I was in high school, I had an injury. I was an athlete, and my brother saw that I was in a lot of pain, both psychic and physical. And he handed me a joint and said, "This will make you feel better." Up until that point, I had not smoked because I was an athlete, and that joint changed my life, and my pain went away. My hope was restored in my future because I wasn't going to be a professional athlete. And, you know, that's really when my journey began. And literally, I think the same night I smoked that joint, I got my first weed from my brother that I was able to sell and start my entrepreneurial journey in high school. So that's when I began. That was 1982, 1983, something
wow.
Like that.
Yeah, so before I was born, for real. you were involved in some of the earlier legal companies as well, right? You were a co-founder of Harborside, very well-known brand in California. I remember vividly seeing the opening of the Harborside dispensary and the governor showing up. But a lot has happened since. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of your legal career and what you're doing now?
Sure. Yeah. Well, Harborside was the first licensed legal cannabis business my brother and I had, and we co-founded that together. It was really my brother's vision. And at that time, it was 2006. We were one of the first. Oakland was the first city to issue licenses anywhere in the world for cannabis businesses under the medical framework in California, Prop 215. So that's when we started. And our vision for a medical cannabis dispensary was unique at that time. There was maybe one or two. Berkeley Patients Group was sort of a model for us. We tried to take that to another level, and the community really responded. The patient community, the cannabis community, the grower community, everybody really responded to our vision, and we blew up. And, you know, before we knew it, we had a couple different dispensaries in Northern California, and we were doing a lot of business and getting a lot of attention and trying our best to scale our businesses in a smart way and not lose the essence of what we're all about. And then there were some other legal businesses that we had to start, because at that time, nobody was lab testing their medicine. and we couldn't get any labs to test cannabis. Yeah. And so we started Steep Hill Labs with some other folks. As soon as Steep Hill was up and running, you know, we divested ourselves and made sure it was an independent entity, because labs, there should be pretty strong red line between labs and operators, of course. And then there was a packaging company we had to start too, because we wanted to do a child resistant packaging for edibles only. And we didn't want to go crazy with the child resistant packaging, which we're seeing now. And I'm a full grown man. I can't get into some of these packages. I have to like, and I'm like, am I going to hurt the weed trying to get into this thing? But we thought it was really important for edibles. So we had to start a packaging company. And then, you know, we needed to build the industry with investors. There weren't that many investors. So the ArcView group was another group that my brother started to do that. And that's really the story of me and my brother's entrepreneurial lives. We build things. We build businesses. We build nonprofits like Last Prisoner Project. And, you know, generally, that's what we're really, really good at. And now today, you know, I've exited Harborside. I am now a consultant full time, and I help other entrepreneurs, you know, do what we did with Harborside, and also starting to work more and more in industrial hemp. And I think it's really important for your investor listeners to really hear right now, hemp herd, there's not enough supply of hemp herd globally, not enough supply of hemp seed for nutrition globally. These are things that there's not enough of. But on the psychoactive cannabis side, we've got too much, right? So if we have to move some of our investment money to industrial hemp, it's going to be a much bigger market. Anything you can make out of petroleum, timber, cotton, pretty much anything you can make out of hemp. And it's a brave new future for industrial hemp. So one of my partners in my consulting co-op, Doug Fine, is one of the leading authors of industrial hemp farming and regenerative farming. And so we've been working with native tribes and other entrepreneurs to try to stand that industry up too, and not just grow hemp for CBD, but to grow hemp for industrial applications. So that's what I'm doing these days, and I'm having a lot of fun
about that, like trying to help a friend find a supplier of hemp fabrics, and you can count them like literally with your two hands. It's like a few in China, a few in India, and like two in the US.
Yeah, Eastern Europe used to have some fiber going on too. You know, you had to weave it. Yeah, it's really hard. And, you know, the Chinese hemp has gotten better in the last 30 years, but it's generally not as high quality as some of the hemp produced in other places. And it should be, you know, like I take hemp oil every morning. I take 2 tablespoons of hemp oil. I just drink it in my mouth. And I get it from Canada. It's Canadian hemp oil is what I'm and you know, every once in a while, Doug Fine will send me some oil from his farm, and that's far superior, right? And you can tell just by drinking it that the phenotypes aren't right. And, you know, you can tell from the hemp, if you eat hemp seed, if you put hemp seed in your smoothie or whatever, it's probably coming from Canada. You can just look at the seed and the itself. It's small. It's not real vibrant. So I think there's just tremendous opportunities with industrial hemp. And I still see plenty of opportunity in psychoactive cannabis too. Very tough moment. I'm sure every single guest you have is, and you guys have also mentioned that in your report today, was, you know, troubling, for investors and troubling for big companies like Canopy Growth. And so we're in just a tough moment, but I promise you it's less tough than it was during the Ronald and Nancy Reagan years when I first started.
That'll put it into perspective for sure. When it comes to the hemp side, we have this conversation often. What is the future of hemp? Is it industrial? Do you think it includes those minor cannabinoids that everybody's raving about right now? Do you think there's a combination of the psychoactive marijuana and THC side with those minor cannabinoids, you know, like Delta 8, CBN, et cetera? I'm curious, where do you see the future of hemp, either in one branch or in several?
Well, it's a great question. It's really, I see it all of the above. I do think that hemp will be grown for cannabinoids like it is now. And there's going to have to be a lot of work on genetics and breeding and so forth to bring that about. And you know, who knows what's going to happen with synthetic cannabinoids, right? That's kind of petri dish cannabinoids is sort of being talked about too right now. But certainly fiber fuel and other industrial applications, I think, are going to be huge. I mean, hempcrete, just that alone, could be millions of acres of hemp could be grown just for fiber and hempcrete. And cannabinoids as well, because we're just at the very beginning of learning about all these cannabinoids and what they do and the mechanisms by which they work together. I call it the ensemble effect. Some people call it the entourage effect. And then terpenes is this whole other area that we have to learn more about. We know a little bit about terpenes, but we don't really know what their effects are, cannabis terpenes, and how they work with the cannabinoids to create this ensemble effect that, you know, the same cannabis, I take the same cannabis every day throughout the day. And the way it affects me in the morning is different than the way it affects me in the evening. Okay. Oh, yeah. It's the same cannabis, right? But I'm different in the evening than I am in the morning. And my adrenaline level might be different. My stress level might be different. My anxiety might be different. You know, in the morning, I've just gotten through a workout and a meditation. So my energy is different than at the end of the day where I'm like, oh my God, what a day in the cannabis industry.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it is people, you know, you mentioned overconsumption and people go, Len May's genetic company, Len's a friend, really like it. He did a run on my DNA. We figured out I'm a 1-to-1 CBD THC person. So I've been actually consuming more 1-to-1 products since I got that back. But overconsuming is kind of it's part of the cannabis journey. I don't know anyone who's a regular cannabis person who hasn't had at least a brush with overconsumption. And when that happens, you know, assuming that there's not something more intense going on other than just a freak out, don't go to the hospital. Stay at home, hydrate yourself, try to put on some music or something that soothes you and ride it out. Time is your friend. It goes really slow. It could be very uncomfortable, but this too shall pass. And you learn from it, right? You're like, okay, not going to do that again. And it humbles you. And it also, you know, teaches you how to interact with these visionary plant medicines. And psychedelics is another thing. The plants are teaching us to don't F with these compounds, right? Be mindful, be respectful. And if you're not, you're going to get spanked. I mean, that's what's going to happen. And I've overconsumed. I've had those fetal position moments on the couch where it's like, oh, mama, am I ever going to survive this? And I did. And I learned from it. So I think that, you know, it is part of it. What's tragic is people overconsume and then they say, I'm never going to take cannabis ever again, or I'm never going to take psilocybin ever again. And that's a shame, because not only are they perhaps not including applications that can help them be well and healthier, but, you know, the benefits that these plants have for our consciousness and our spiritual and emotional relationships to ourselves and to others is also something you don't get if you swear them off for life. So I'm hopeful that, like your first guest said, we can educate folks and get them, you know, not to be scared when something goes off the rails a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you're certainly on the right track there. And I was going to get into one more topic, but we're definitely over time. And this new time slot we got is tighter, but we will have you back. And I'm going to drop a link in the chat for later, for when our viewers get some time. You wrote this ultra viral Forbes article about a lifestyle adopted by Willie Nelson and Billy Strings that is taking hold. I know what it is about. I know I don't want to spoil it because I think the headline creates quite a bit of intrigue. So
go check it out.
And we'll have you back to discuss what is this lifestyle about.
I'll be glad to come back, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thrilled to have you, Andrew. Thanks again, man.
Bye-bye.
All right, awesome. We had some awesome guests today. We did run a little over. Thank you all for sticking with us. We will be back next Tuesday at 1 Eastern time. With that said, Javier, my Argentinian action figure brethren, appreciate you. Thank you, Zinger Nation. We will see you again next time. Love all you guys. Peace.
Peace. We'll be right back.